This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
How do you manage fatigue? Welcome back to MS Momentum. My name is Katie Burns. I'm the Community Connector for MS Otago. MS Momentum is our monthly podcast on ORFM, where I interview people from across Otago and beyond on all things related to MS. Today, I'm continuing the interview we started last month with Jessie Snowden, founder and director of On The Go Physio and a physiotherapist with over 20 years of experience working with people with neurological conditions. Welcome back to the show, Jessie.
Thanks, Katie.
So like I said before, this is the second part of our two-part interview. So if you have not yet already listened to part one, then I highly recommend going on to the ORFM website to have a listen. If you just search for MS Momentum in the podcast list, you should be able to find that. So Jessie, in the first interview, you gave a really great overview of what fatigue is, what effects it can have, and how self-management can really help in terms of fatigue. So this time we're really going to focus on fatigue management and how people can really live as well as possible when they have fatigue.
Excellent. So let's jump right in, and we'll use the principles that were used for the Minimize Fatigue, Maximize Energy. Oh, it was Maximize Life talk program, sorry. And the reason that I made that mark up there is because what I've got written in front of me is Maximize Energy. And what the principles of that were, that firstly, you identify everything around your fatigue, and then you use the available energy that you've got to maximize the way that you're living. So there's a couple of principles, and that's what led to the name. When we look at fatigue, there are a huge number of reasons that people might have fatigue. And some of them, you know, we talked at the beginning, the first one, about how MS fatigue was different. But we're all humans, and we were joking about people saying you just need to sleep more. Of course, if sleep is an issue, then yes, there is absolutely no harm in getting your sleep sorted, first of all. So to really dig deep into what's causing your fatigue, it's really important to do some reflection. And when I introduce the fatigue diary in the classes, there's always a bit of a moan and people think, oh, you're really going to make me write everything down for a week. But again, I've been sharing some quotes from people, and this is from a woman living with MS, and she said, it wasn't until we did the diary that I started to understand. It made me realize it's not normal for most people to need a rest by the time they've got themselves up and through the shower. Once I understood what was happening, it was easier to do something about it. And another woman also said, I found the fatigue diary straightforward. How can one make changes without actually seeing how we spend our time? I was amazed how my life as a stay-at-home mum was so reactive to the needs and wants of my family. And I particularly, that second one always makes me smile, because that woman came back on week two. So week one, she was given the diary. Halfway through that week, they were able to go and buy a second car. And she said that because she wasn't working, she'd become the taxi driver, including driving her husband to work. And then doing the diary made her realise that that was one of the biggest contributors to her fatigue. So straight away, she was able to deal with it. He drove himself to work. And even the second half of that week, her fatigue levels had changed. So a fatigue diary is simply writing down what you do and how you feel afterwards, and a 0 to 10 scale is just incredibly helpful. 10 being crazy fatigue and 0 being no fatigue. I suspect there won't be many zeros out there. So the other thing we talked about in the first episode was the types of fatigue, and that's where the diary can be helpful as well. So helping you think about whether your fatigue is physical, cognitive, so thinking, or emotional fatigue. The other thing with this as well, and we talked about self-management and that nobody knows you like you do, you're allowed to decide what fatigue is acceptable for you as well. And so when you're rating your fatigue out of 10, you can then choose and say, actually, 7 is okay. For me, 7, I'm really busy, I've got lots of projects at work, sometimes I'm going to need to push myself. Or you might say, actually, the way that my lifestyle is, I can never let my fatigue get above 3. So how you manage your fatigue will be different, but what well-managed fatigue looks like is that you don't have those huge highs and lows So if you've decided that 3 is your limit, that on most days you're able to keep your fatigue under 3. Again, the next person along might, for them, they might say 7's okay, and they want to not let it get up to an 8 or a 9. So it's really personal, and having that diary and doing the reflecting lets you personalise that for yourself.
It's really the blueprint, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and it is hard. And, you know, we talked in the first episode about how this approach won't work for everyone, because there's quite a lot of thinking involved in this. And it might be that you have someone in your life who helps you with it, who might be able to see your fatigue a little bit easier than you can see it, because sometimes you'll have tells. I'll move on to what to do, really, because that's, first of all, that's the reflecting and the understanding. And then we get into different things around managing fatigue. And these are actually, I didn't make these up, these are time management skills that anyone can look up. But they are really helpful. And when you've got your diary in front of you, you can then decide, there's the 4 D's, whether you're going to dump it, whether it's something that you're doing that causes you fatigue, that you actually, it's just fallen to you and you don't need to do it, or you can decide not to do it anymore. You might delay it. These are things that you still need to do or want to do, but you can put them off until you've got more energy. Then there's delegate it, things that someone else could just do, you know, just as easily. And then there's do it, but do it smarter. So these, again, are things that you really can't put off doing, or things that you really want to do. And then you're looking at, can you do these in a cleverer way? And then those were the D's, now we're on to the P's. And once you've got it down to the stuff that you have to do or want to do, we look at planning it, prioritising, pacing yourself and preserving energy. So I'm doing a lot of talking, but I'll touch briefly, if you're happy for me, just to touch on what those P's might look like. So planning is about looking a day, a week, a month, whatever works for you in advance, and seeing what is coming up, having an understanding of what might increase your fatigue, and putting things in an appropriate way. So some people might just use a basic diary. I use a diary still. Everyone's trying to get me onto an online calendar and I can't cope. So it might be a diary, a planner, a calendar. It might be online. But that's putting in the stuff that you actually have to do. And then if you're asked to do something else, or if you know you've got something else to do, you plan it around that. So just good time management planning. But it's not always easy for any of us. The next thing is prioritising. And again, I think many people, myself included, struggle with this. So one of the women in our group has said, I learned to decide if it was really important to do things at a particular time or if I even needed to do them at all. So that is really looking at what is in that plan and seeing what's can be things be moved, but do you have to do them at all? The next one is really interesting. I'll just pause on this slightly because this one is about pacing. So this is around balancing activity and rest, and it can be really hard. But the opposite of pacing is called boom and bust. And that's when you wake up and you think, man, I feel good, and you push too hard. And then you're absolutely wiped out that afternoon or for the next day. So pacing yourself is really about thinking about your energy, planning and rest. And something that people in the group really loved was this concept of preventative rest. That was something that came through that people said, man, I'd never thought about that. And that is knowing you've got something coming up that's really important that you want to do or you have to do, and therefore you rest up beforehand. So, you know, it sounds simple, it's hard to do, but that's a concept that people really, really liked. Then preserve your energy is around still doing things, but doing them in a more sensible way. So one woman realised that she could actually sit down to blow dry her hair, and just putting a chair in there made a big difference. Someone else realised that when they're using their computer, if they typed with really big font, it really eased their fatigue, like their eye fatigue. And then when they'd finished their document, they could obviously just change the font and put it back into something slightly more socially acceptable to send to somebody else. The other thing around preserving energy is life hacks. You know, this can be big life hacks where an occupational therapist might come in and help you with equipment, or it might be the life hacks that you start seeing on social media of like just ideas for doing things really sensibly. And things like online shopping, you know, really, really basic things like that. So those are the P's and the D's.
Yeah, and something I talk about sometimes with clients of mine is I call it life automation, and it's what I do at home. So, like, we have a key hook that's right by the door, so every time I get home I hang my keys on the key hook. And then when I leave the house I know that's where they are, and I'm not having to – it's one less thing to think about kind of thing. Yeah.
Yep, 100%. Although I've got two daughters, one automatically does that, and the other one I would spend my entire life chasing her to put her keys on the hook. So it's really things that seem so clear and easy for some people are really hard, but it is so sensible. If you can make those things habitual, then they're off your cognitive radar. You just don't have to think about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's funny you say that because I'm the put the key on the key hooker set, and my husband is it not that person at all. We have little head butting moments where I'm like, hang your keys off the key hook. and again, it does, personality definitely comes into it, and like the type of person you are. But yeah, I mean, you know, even if hanging the keys on the key hook isn't the thing for you. But maybe, you know, maybe you put your shoes in the same place by the door every day, so when you're going out, you know exactly where your shoes are. Or, you know, whatever that is for you, I think that process is quite important, because once it's in place and once it's really going, then it does become this just automatic process that does make life a little bit easier.
It does. We ended up buying an Alexa for the family, and everybody – when we run out of something, we add it to the shopping list. And that has changed. That's given me about 2 hours back of a lot of my life, because I then sit with the Alexa, go through the shopping list, use my countdown, it's Woolworths online shopping, and someone brings it to me. And it took me a long time to embrace that, because I didn't like that they, you know, bought so many bags. But then when you weigh up fatigue, life, everything else on your time, it's worth it for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're in a stage now where we can use technology as a tool to make our lives easier, if that's what we choose to do. And, you know, like, obviously people are going to have different opinions on how much technology they might have in their lives. I don't think it's probably possible to have none, no technology in your life nowadays. But, you know, like how much, but that can, again, be really, really useful for people to use it as a tool to help. We're just going to take a short break to hear about what services MS Otago offers.
MS Otago aims to empower people with multiple sclerosis and their support networks by providing them with information and skills to participate actively in the community in ways that are meaningful to them. You can find us at Dunedin Community House and online at msotago.org.nz, or you can give us a call on 027 889 9035. MS Otago, working for the people of Otago.
If you are just joining us, this is MS Momentum. My name is Katie Burns, and I'm the Community Connector for MS Otago. This is part two of a two-part interview with Jessie Snowden about fatigue management. So before the break, we were talking about fatigue management, about those kind of that early blueprint of really, I guess, creating a plan of what your fatigue looks like in your life for you. And then we talked about the four D's and the four P's, which you're probably going to have to remind me exactly what they stand for.
So I'm going to have to remind myself. So those four D's, we're looking at the things that might cause you fatigue. Can you dump them, delay them, delegate them, or can you do it in a smarter way? And then and that's when the four P's, which was looking at all the things that you do have to or want to do in your life. And then using planning, prioritising, pacing, which is a really big one that I'd love people to think about, and preserving energy with clever life hacks or bigger things that an occupational therapist might help you with in terms of equipment.
Yeah, perfect. And when we're looking at fatigue and talking about fatigue, and I think we kind of talked a little bit about this at the end of the last episode, is other people might notice the fatigue more than we do, or you might be listening to this and thinking, well, I don't have fatigue, but I have someone in my life that I really care about that has, that I can really tell fatigue is quite a big thing for them.
Yes.
What advice would you give, I guess, to people in that position that might help the person with fatigue?
Yeah.
To manage and I think that?
It's communication, which I know seems obvious in some ways, but it's really about communication, and that will look different for everybody. As we said, people are completely different. So figuring out who, if you're the person with fatigue, figuring out who you want to communicate with, because some of this might not be anyone else's business, you know, or you might find that you do have to talk to someone at work about it, but you don't want to tell all your colleagues. But obviously the people who you live with in your house, it's really helpful if you can communicate. Knowing what works and knowing the age and ability of the person you're talking to, because the way that you communicate with young kids might be, will be completely different from your family. When you think about how you want to communicate, you can use words, and there's things that I'm sure people have heard of, like the teaspoon theory of fatigue, that you've only got so much energy, looking at battery life, or it might be more visual. So you might have your armchair, and training the family that when you're sitting in your armchair, you can't be interrupted. It may be that you need to have the phrase, and it might not be, I am feeling fatigued. It might be, I need to put my feet up, or I just need a quick rest. And making sure that the other person in your, other people in your life know that that's a bit of a non-negotiable for you. Or you might use percentages. We've talked about the power of a 0 to 10, and saying that when I hit 5, you know, I'm coming up to a 5, I'm going to need to go home. I'm going to need to change things around. So that is communication, and it's a good skill for people living with fatigue to have. The other thing that we've already touched on, you know, quite a lot, is that self-reflection. And we looked at the diary, and part of the diary is to figure out all of the things that might cause you fatigue. And then when we talk about that minimize fatigue, maximize life, the minimize fatigue is figuring out where things are sitting and actually, can you do anything about them? So I've got a list in front of me. This is a huge list, and what I'd like to do is touch on each one, but only briefly. Mm-hmm. And then it might be a future podcast, or people can just recognize that that's an issue for them. We talked about sleep, but that was one of the, and the one that people who don't fully understand about MS fatigue might be saying, well, can't you just sleep a bit more? But there's something called sleep hygiene. And again, it's easy to find some more information about this online. The main thing about sleep is recognizing that you might have a problem with sleeping, and what the problem is it falling asleep or waking up? But sleep hygiene is about treating sleep with respect, trying to go to bed at the same time every night, having a wind down routine. We know we don't need to be told that we shouldn't really be on our phones for those last couple of hours. So looking at sleep hygiene might be something that people want to look up. And then associated with sleep is rests. And we've talked about preventative rests and planning around rests. Another thing that people might notice when they've looked at their fatigue diary is they might be tired around meals. And that can be a couple of things. It can be if you're the person that is doing all the thinking and planning and the doing around creating a meal, that might be exhausting. Or it might be that actually just the process of eating and the size of your meal is too much. So when you've done your diary, you might reflect that actually you're better to have 5 small meals a day than you are to have 3 larger ones. Or it might be that your kitchen's just too hot for you, so you need to come up with strategies for that. And I know one woman said greater thought is going into meal preparation. I plan and prepare earlier in the day. Other family members serve food from the oven. My wobbly journey from the kitchen with hot food was dangerous. So she's taken herself out of the heat of that environment with that. Nutrition is out of scope for me, but that's a huge component that people might be able to look into a little more. And then also out of scope, but because I'm a 48-year-old woman, I'm suddenly really aware of the effect of hormones, and so much of fatigue for women who are in that sort of 40s and 50s might be related to hormones, and that's a whole another topic, but not everything is MS's fault. Some medications cause fatigue, so that's something to consider when you're looking at your diary. And mood, having a low mood, being stressed and anxiety, all of that can make you feel really fatigued. And then being fatigued can also cause you to feel stressed or anxious, or affect your mood as well. Exercise is something that is really interesting for people with MS. There's now a whole lot of evidence, and again, not enough time today, and there's some other experts in Aotearoa that could help with this, but there is so much evidence that when exercise is done in a certain way, then it can actually be, they're saying they're disease modifying, mm-hmm. you know, which means that it can actually affect the way that MS affects your body with exercise. The most important thing, because we're talking about fatigue, is that thinking, right, I must be doing a certain sort of exercise and starting can actually, if your fatigue's not under control, that can just become one more pressure in your life. So huge evidence around exercise, and I would be encouraging people living with MS to really look at exercise with a neurophysio to begin with, or someone who's got a huge amount of experience, because there's so much nuance around MS and ways of dealing with heating particularly. So I wouldn't actually recommend that people just go to the gym with that sort of need to exercise. But as I said, you need to be in control of your fatigue first. So looking at all of the tools that we've talked about today, and then when you're really putting your exercise in, but remembering that should also be planned and paced and prepared. So it's hugely important, but if it causes you bigger fatigue, you need to look at your overall fatigue management. And there will be people listening who think, but when I exercise, my symptoms get worse. And we know that that's because of heating, and that making worse of symptoms isn't permanent, but there's a huge amount of work that has been done around pre-cooling and drinking icy slushies and putting in rest breaks within a workout as well. So not for me today, but there are now guidelines that say exercise should be prescribed from that day of diagnosis for people. I'm just thinking, I'm aware we've got limited time. I feel like I probably have kicked off the key points there. There's a lot more I can explore, but I think if we really summarise what we've talked about, that MS fatigue is different from other fatigue. There's a lot more talk post-COVID, you know, long COVID, we understand more about fatigue in general, which I actually think is going to be helpful for people living with MS. There's a lot more interest in research. We know it's different. We know that it has a huge impact on people's life, often the biggest impact, and it's not always seen. It's never seen. It's not something that we can see. We know that the best way to manage fatigue is to self-manage, and the first step in that is the fatigue diary. So coming up with a way of really understanding your fatigue, what it looks like, what its patterns are, what's acceptable to you in your life, in your lifestyle, what works with you and your family, and then to understand what are those factors for you that might be causing fatigue. And that can be quite a logical process if you're someone like me that likes going through logically. Is your sleep okay? Actually, are your meals okay? Have you got the right nutrition? Could it be something unrelated to MS like hormones? Could you actually be anemic and you've been thinking this whole time that MS was causing you fatigue, but it was something unrelated? That list is endless. Is it the way, you know, the work-life balance? It goes on and on. But once you've identified it, then working through and trying to work on each of those just a wee bit at a time.
Yeah.
But keep that diary in mind, because people, when we did our six-week program, I actually got people to rate their fatigue, but I took it away from them. And then after 6 weeks, they rated it again. And some people would say, I don't know if I'm any better. And then I was able to give them their before and after scores, and everyone was better. It made such an impact on people's lives. But the huge impact of it was that they were with other people. Yeah, with a bit of expertise in the room, but they were working through it with other people.
Yeah, and I mean, we are unfortunately out of time again, and I feel like we could probably sit here and talk for another four episodes about everything. But just really thank you so much, Jessie, for making the time to come and speak about what is very complex but very important topic. I think especially MS, like you say, it's very common. And I completely agree. Most of the people I work with do have some level of fatigue, and quite often it is one of the hardest things that they deal with in their day-to-day life, and it is so invisible that, yeah. So having like an idea even of how they can manage that in their day-to-day lives is like very powerful and very empowering, especially since it's not, you know, well, here, take this pill. It's really self-management, what works for you, what's important to your life. I think that's just so, so important. And I'm sure everyone listening has really taken some important information away from this conversation. So yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Katie. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
You've been listening to MS Momentum, brought to you on the third Wednesday of the month by me, Katie Burns, Community Connector for MS Otago. You can listen again to this episode and find other podcasts from this series at oar.org.nz and on your favourite podcast platforms. To contact MS Otago, you can email info@msotago.org.nz or call us on 027 889 9035. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.